Welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
Brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. Staying well, staying home.
We continue our This Life double bill now on Distinct Nostalgia. Last week we met Daniela Nardini, who played feisty Scottish Anna in the groundbreaking BBC Two late night drama. And now we're talking to another actor from the show, Jason Hughes, who's since become known as Detective Sergeant Ben Jones in Midsummer Murders, played a young lawyer from Wales called Warren. He happened to be gay, and that was quite a big thing at the time. This was 1996, so This Life was portraying a fully fledged gay male character long before Queer as Folk. And Warren's world was quite a complex one, as MIM's Ashley Byrne has been finding out. Enjoy.
So let's go right back then to the start of This Life. 23 years ago, I think it started. No, actually, 24 years ago, 1996, I think it was. Take us back to before that, before This Life. And, you know, what were you doing? How did it all emerge for you?
I had what I'd been doing. I think I'd sort of left drama school about three years before we started that, before I got that job. So it was, you know, that classic thing of just a sort of 21-year-old actor leaving the bubble of a drama school and having no idea whatsoever what I was sort of going into. You know, I had no idea about the business. Really, the only bit of information that we'd kind of got, we were given when we left was, you know, join the RSC, and that was sort of something that was the sort of pinnacle of, you know, theatre. And, you know, at the time, it was, you know, signing up, if you did do that route, was like a two odd years. And I just was at that point going, there's just no way I've spent 3 years in drama school that I'm going to go and join another thing where I'm going to spend another 2 years. So that wasn't an option for me. So it was just that thing of going up for auditions, doing commercial castings. I remember doing commercial castings, which were horrendous, and the most sort of humiliating thing you could put yourself through, really.
Did you end up doing any of the commercials?
God, no. Are you kidding me? No, absolutely not. I mean, I didn't get anywhere near them. I stopped doing them, actually, because they were just, I just thought, if this is what being an actor is, then I'm out. I got to find something else to do because I can't do this. And then I did a few things in theatre, a few bits of TV here and there. It was about 3 years, I think. I'd been knocking around as a young actor, trying to, you know, live in London, doing bits and bobs, trying to kind of get a career going and, you know, struggling along. And, you know, it was okay. It was all right. Anyway, this audition came up for this thing, This Life. And I think they'd seen so many people prior to me. I think they were really down at the bottom of the barrel when they got to me. And I went in for a meeting with them all. And the casting director, the wonderful, beautiful Di Carling, came running out with a room and calling me. And I remember going, oh no, what have I done? What have I done now? I thought that went rather well. And she came up and she said, listen, they all want you to come back and meet us again. So just to let you know that that'll be happening. And that was the first time that had ever happened, that a casting director had actually run out of a room to kind of grab you and go, come back. So even if I hadn't got the job, I was still chuffed that I'd made enough of an impression that they wanted to run out of the room and ask me to come back. So I enjoyed that moment immensely, as you can imagine.
And did you have any idea what you were auditioning for? Did you know what the programme was about at that point?
I think so. I think we had a sort of rough idea. At that point, I think the very first one, I just got like a script. So I knew, you know, it was really just off that one episode, that first opening episode. In fact, I think the first episode. So all I knew was it was about 20-somethings, you know, living in London, and that Warren was, you know, a gay character. And that was all I knew at that point.
We'll talk in a moment about how you got to know the others, but in the beginning, all of you were pretty much unknown, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And nobody, we were all very young. I think Daniela and myself were maybe like a couple of years older maybe than the rest of them. So I think we'd been going a little bit longer than they had. So they were even younger. I mean, I think I was like 24 going on 25. So those guys, you know, would have been sort of like 22, 23. So yeah, I mean, those weren't the days where you could walk out of drama college, get an American agent, get an American manager, you know, have an agent here, decide that you want to fly off to LA and do pilot season. I mean, it just didn't exist. You know, and your repertory, you know, because repertory theatre was dying a rate of knots when I left drama college as well, sadly. And so really, you know, your rep became, you know, doing what was going on. Peak Practice, The Bill, London's Burning, you know, all those shows that were out and around at the time. So it was about sort of like, and that's what I was doing, sort of bouncing between, you know, doing those shows.
Yeah, you were cutting your teeth on those shows. I suppose a decade or two earlier, people would have done that on Crown Court and things like that.
Exactly, and because repertory theatre, you know, I went to a drama college, which, you know, you're sort of geared towards theatre, really. We had the most ridiculous television course that we did for, I think, 2 months, which was a complete waste of time, money and effort on everybody's part. So in terms of having a skill and working in front of a camera, you weren't taught it at drama school. And we were trained to kind of leave, to go into theatre. But repertory theatre was just dying out. So it was a bit of a quandary, really, as a young actor. You know, you either would to try and get into a, you know, a regional theatre somewhere, or doing those TV shows that were on.
Can you remember meeting the cast for the first time?
Yeah. The first time I met them, everybody together, was when we'd all, you know, got the jobs and we'd come together for some rehearsals. But I think that some of them had met because some of them had auditioned with each other. Nobody in my... There were two meetings, and then the third one, they were starting to put people together, to pair people up and put people in groups and see how the dynamic and, you know, everybody's like that. So a few of them had done that third audition together. I hadn't. I was with a bunch of people that wasn't them. So that was the very first time I met everybody was first day rehearsals. Yeah.
And what was your impression of everyone? How did they come over? Did you think, you know, I've let myself in for something here, or did you all have a chemistry?
God, yeah. I was, you know, first of all, I was sort of intrigued to meet everybody and see. You know, because when you're reading scripts and you're thinking about it, and you sort of imagine, you know, who these people are in your head. You're using your imagination to create the other characters. And so when I met everybody, I just thought they were perfectly cast, actually. I thought everybody was, they you know, Sam Miller and Di Carling and the whole team, they'd chosen a perfect cast because everybody seemed absolutely right for their role. I didn't meet any of them and go, I can't see why that's not who I imagined. That's not the kind of, that wasn't Egg, that wasn't Millie, that was they. Everybody was sort of very strong and very good, very accomplished. And we were a group of young actors, you know, none of us really had that much experience at all, but you just got a sense immediately off the bat that and this was a talented group of actors, you know. Felt good being in their company from the off. I just thought I was really happy that I was with a strong group of actors who were all really, really good at what they were doing.
So what were you told about your character? What were you told about Warren? You know, how much were you told about that? And how much of Warren sort of evolved over time?
Well, the first episode is pretty clear. I mean, reading Ep 1, you knew quite a bit about him. He was in therapy. He was from a small town in Wales, and he was not a sort of straight guy. So for me, that was kind of enough, really. I knew that, I kind of knew what I was dealing with. I didn't really need to see more scripts to kind of get a sense of the character. Because I think, you know, I think you'll agree that the scripts were so well written that you kind of know the territory from the off, really. So I didn't really need any more scripts. I read that one and I was happy. I knew kind of, you know, what I wanted to create and what I wanted to do with the character, you know.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah. We all artists, man. We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
Shit.
I ain't gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it.
Take that shit serious.
What I remember more than anything, and I'm, you know, within the LGBT community, the thing that struck me most was identifying actually with those, you know, with Warren's therapy sessions that he went through. They were funny in their own little way, but they also connected with me. And I think they connected with lots of other people too. So tell us about them. Were they quite fun in a way to do?
Yeah, they were. They, you know, because, you know, you associate monologues with the theatre, you know. You don't really, I didn't anyway at the time as a young actor. I never really, you know, it was surprising and pleasing to go, oh my gosh, I've got to sit in front of a camera and reel off this stuff and it's just going to be me for 2, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, some of them, that, you know, and you're not going to cut away, you're just going to watch him. So as a challenge for me as an actor, it was fantastic because I had to carry those monologues, and there was no cutouts, there was nobody, nothing was going to happen, it was just me. So it was really interesting to see that as a thing on television anyway, to have just, you know, a camera pointing at a character and going, off you go, go on, talk, let's. So they were really challenging and really, I loved them. I mean, the irony of them is, of course, I think I've said this in interviews before, I think I have, but what happened was, because we were on such a tight budget, and because we had to get through huge amounts of stuff every day, inevitably you run out of time. And so you have to pick those scenes up later on in the schedule. Somehow all the things that you don't get done have to be shot and have to be redone. So what eventually happened was you'd have this big build-up. Well, not big build-up, but a build-up of scenes that hadn't been shot and things that needed to be shot. And so as a result, the last bits of the block for the episodes, we were filming at like 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And so what happened was that I was taken to a room that they created somewhere for us all to be, like a green room, a makeshift green room, you know, and sit in it and wait for them to shoot everything. And then when they were ready, they'd go into this therapist's office that the set designer had made. And usually late at night, I would reel off one monologue after the other. So I would do one, I would change costume, go back, do another one, change costume, and so on. So, but actually, yeah, I'm not complaining, because actually it played into my favor in a way, because they were just a separate little bubble. They were isolated. They were going to be done all in one, all together. Everything had been done. Everything had been shot. There was just us, the director, the cameraman, you know, the little crew, and our script editor. So the woman that you hear talking is an actress. I never met her. My therapist, always in my mind and all, and forever will be, was the script editor. She read in, and she sat there and was my therapist. So they were, because at the time as well, you know, therapy in Britain was like something Americans did. You know, and we used to sort of, you know, we look at Americans to say, you know, they're all in therapy. Everyone's doing therapy. It's all about bloody therapy. And we, at the time, we thought that was a nonsense in this country. Of course, it's all changed now. Thank God. So I was a little worried, I guess, as well, that how they're received, you know, what's it going to be like for an audience to watch a young gay man talking about his sexuality and his desire to be accepted as just a person.
What was interesting was that for a lot of LGBT people, there comes a point in life, no matter who you are with or what circles you're a part of, where you begin to feel like a token person in a situation. And that's what Warren was in a way, wasn't he? Because he was no doubt very envious of everyone else and really wanted to get his own world going and perhaps struggled with that. I think that's what a lot of us identified with. He was quite down and depressed sometimes, but he still kept a sense of humour along the way. And those monologues were quite detailed, and the way they were filmed was quite unique as well, it seemed. The fact that you got this close up on you, you felt there was more realism compared with other programmes at the time. What was that like for you as an actor, and how did it feel to forge a more realistic connection with the audience?
I think that the whole concept of the whole piece was that it was meant to feel like that, real, that it wasn't sort of staged or airbrushed. You know, the characters weren't the clean kind of TV ready, sort of like an oven ready chicken. You know, the whole concept was to make it dirty and messy. And I think that the style of shooting was really to sort of like, I think also reflect the way that human beings are. We are, you know, emotionally messy. We're up and we're down and we're happy and we're sad and we're frustrated. And we have issues with sexuality. We have issues with relationships. We have issues with our work. You know, the human beings don't just operate on a flat plateau, you know, that landscape never shifts. And I think the sort of emotional landscape was, I think, reflected in the way that the thing was shot, because it was messy, and I think that all of us wanted to you know, be as honest and as real as we absolutely possibly could make it. And you do as an actor, you know, that's what you want. You want everybody to watch whatever you do and go, I completely buy that person that I'm watching, this story that I'm telling. I feel like this is, like you described, you know, that feeling of like, this is happening, this is real. So it is great to hear, you know, when people say that it feels like that, because that's exactly what we were, you know, that's what we're going for.
Take 23.
Distinct Comedy presents.
Oh, hello. I'm Jolyon Karp. I'm doing a voiceover.
Oh, hello.
Experience a day in the life of voiceover guy.
Take 13.
I'm playing a pirate.
Are you sure you're in the right place?
Written and performed by Jonathan Kidd.
Take 24.
Aha! Splice the main brace, me hearties. Get on down to Captain Jacob's boat supplies. Sail is now on. Get it?
Oh, good, let's treat that one as a run-through.
Aha!
Available now on the Distinct Comedy Podcast.
Okay then, can we do a series of less piratical wild ahas in threes and we'll splice them on? That okay, Paul?
The trials and tribulations of a life spent in voiceover.
Sorry, I only have two lemon with honey.
I'd like my coffee. I shall scream without a coffee.
New and original comedy.
Softer.
Aha!
Well, actually, on reflection, I'm not happy with them.
I like what we had, all rough and piratey.
Listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or I might have to give you a black spot.
That was blood out of a stone. Won't use him again.
Now, obviously, the show was tucked away in the late night schedules on BBC Two in that slot. A lot of people stumbled across it completely by chance and might not have known that it was there. quite a lot of cult programmes start out that way, don't they, in fact? When did you realise that this was something that people were talking about and it was beginning to make a bit of a buzz?
The one thing that stands out was, like, the first episode was aired. Well, what they did is they mashed two episodes into one. So they made the first episode, the first two episodes, they amalgamated them all. So I remember a Time Out interview, because I, you know, at the time, Time Out, especially when I lived in London, was my Bible. I had that thing tucked under my arm 24/7, and I didn't so much care for what anybody in the press thought about it, apart from Time Out. I just thought, if we get a good review, if Time Out get this, I'm happy, you know. I wish I could find the review, because it really wasn't a very good review. But the last line of it, it gave this sort of like, I don't know about this. Summarizing here, but it was basically kind of going, I'm not sure about this. I don't know about this. What are we watching? What is this meant to be? This camera work is making me dizzy. I feel a bit ill after watching it and all that sort of stuff. And it went on and on and on like this. And then it got to the last line and it went, but it's also witty, stylish, sexy and engaging. And I thought, well, hang on. You've just kind of trashed it. And then at the end gone, but it's also witty, stylish, sexy and engaging. But isn't that... That's good, isn't it? Isn't that good? So I was completely confused as to what was going on. You know, I thought, I just. And then I think that then sort of people started to come up to you in the street and go and say, you know, are you the guy from This Life? Or we just watched that. We really like it. And so, because I think we were very, you know, we were also quite close as well. And so we all sort of stayed in touch and we hung out together after we'd filmed it, because we'd been on a hell of a kind of emotional journey, you know, in the time that you're shooting this thing and it's never been done before and it's all brand new. And we were really young. And so we stayed really close. So we'd go out together and socialize together, you know, go out for drinks and go to restaurants and stuff like this. And so I started to notice that people were coming over to the table and that was the first sort of sense that people were watching it. And then, of course, I don't know what episode it was, but suddenly the whole press just did a U-turn on it all and went, it's brilliant, it's great, we love it, it's fantastic, got to watch this show. And then we sort of realised, okay, this is something that people are really enjoying and they're really getting into.
Now your character obviously struggled all the way through and got into the odd scrape and things. Tell us about how you think Warren actually evolved and how you felt, you know, his character, you know, what you felt about what his character was going through. Did he change in the right way or not, do you think?
Do you mean in terms of, like, how he evolved sort of, what, emotionally or his storylines or...
Yeah, I mean, do you think they, gave Warren enough? Do you think they explored his character enough? I mean, obviously, that, you know, there's only so many series, you know, two series. It could have gone forever. But you know, just a little bit about how Warren's character developed and how you felt about that, really. I mean, obviously, he got all that therapy going on. And then, of course, he suddenly meets Ferdy, you know, and all those sorts of things. You know, how did it play out for you?
I thought they did a great job. I think that, you know, he started out as this sort of really vulnerable, you know, young guy who's was in London in this massive city alone, and he kind of gets a job at this firm and discovers that there's this group of people that he was at college with, or university, you know, he was around, who were these really popular people, and they were a group. But again, you know, that's Warren's perception of them. They may not necessarily have been the golden people or the, like, the in crowd or the, you know, the ones to be around and all the rest of it. That was just Warren's perception of them. And there they are, you know, and there these people are. No, I thought they did a great job, because he sort of became a part of something that he'd always wanted to be a part of. And then once that was established, then it was about him fitting in and about being accepted by them and then learning to live with them and then meeting somebody and then sort of like sort of falling in love with this guy. And I think that kind of brings it up to the end of series one. I thought they did that very, very well. I thought the way they developed the characters within storylines and the way he emotionally developed, I thought was great. His therapy sessions changed slightly, and you know how he did, how he dealt with, you know, not his cousin turning up, not wanting to be a secret and keeping the secrets from her, and then how the group then help him to say, hey, it's okay, you know, you don't need to do that, it's all right, and how they help him sort of come to terms with that and be honest with her. I thought it was lovely the way that they developed the character. In terms of playing him and the development of that, I would say that it was one of those jobs where I wanted to get it so right, so perfect, which I do anyway, but especially because it was a big job for me, really. You know, 4 months' work was, you know, on telly was, at the time, it was like, wow. You know, it felt like forever. It felt like I was filming like for a whole year. I wanted that to start. I didn't want any room for manoeuvre because I felt like a duty, really, to a community of people that I'm portraying. And there had never been anybody on television, like a character on television like that before. Actually, it was twofold, because it was also, I'm Welsh, and you don't get to hear Welsh accents on at that time, again, especially, and I didn't want to, you know, so there were two things. There was a community of people that I had a duty to represent, but there was also my country, because, you know, I wanted Wales, a Welshman depicted on television, not as a flat cap, sheep shagging kind of choir, beer drinking rugby person, you know. And so I really did an intensive amount of work before I started to make sure that everything was absolutely watertight, and so that I would start that show on day one and finish it on the last day, and you would never see an actor coming to grips with something, that it was all absolutely there. The moment, I mean, it's what you do and what you have to do with everything. But I think that particularly I wanted, that was really my approach. So for me, there was no development in terms of, like, you know, in episode one, I was sort of playing him a certain way, and by episode eight, I was really into a thing with him. That never happened, because in episode one, he was already made, he was done, he was fully formed, and I didn't there was nowhere I needed to go to kind of get him. He was there from the off.
What was also interesting was watching a group of straight people handling LGBT issues for the first time. What I've found even today is that some groups of people really don't know how to handle various LGBTQ issues when faced with them. And it was really interesting to see Miles' character coming up against these things and being challenged as a straight man.
I mean, there were elements of Warren's life that Miles was quite shocked by, wasn't there, really? I mean, Egg probably handled it better, but Miles certainly had, you know, he was uncomfortable, wasn't he, at times?
Yeah, I think, like you say, it's probably sort of symptomatic and symbolic of people's attitude to the gay community, the LGBTQ, you know, community. So he sort of represented pretty much the general consensus, didn't he, I think? Yeah, I guess if there is a lesson there, it's sort of like, you know, once you educate yourself and understand what's in front of you, actually, you know, you sort of you feel embarrassed because you were that ignorant, and you'd formed these preconceptions about somebody or something that turned out to be completely unfounded, and that was his own struggle. And I think that, I don't know, with Warren, I guess that I'm trying to think back, but we kept that sort of tension going because it was important and necessary. And like you say, there were sort of like, when, you know, and then moments where they needed each other. They came together and they helped each other and they supported each other. Because actually, taking, if you strip everything else aside, you know, love underpins everything. And there was a love there for each other. And there was a desire to help and an empathy there.
And Miles probably realised when the penny dropped that, you know, the wild times he was having weren't that dissimilar, really, to the wild times that that Warren was having. And actually, the two characters were quite similar. Only one was straight and one was gay.
Exactly. I mean, you know, all that earlier stuff with that young girl who comes in and that disgusting kind of sordid sexual relationship that they had, you know, that he sort of accused sort of like Warren and that sort of gay community of being like. And there he is doing it himself, you know.
Do I remember rightly that didn't, you know, Ferdy rub Miles up the wrong way as well a little bit? You know, I mean, Ferdy was a bit of a messy character anyway.
I think so. I think he disapproved. I think he disapproved. But, I mean, that's something for Jack to talk about because I can't remember, if I'm honest. Yeah, there was some tension between the two of them. And I think that, and he was staying there at the house, wasn't he? And I think that was like a rule. You weren't allowed, even though the Miles had done that with that young, with the girl that he'd sort of met, this sort of messy, you know, woman that he'd kind of met. It was all right for him to do that, but it wasn't okay for, you know, somebody else to do it. So there was all that going on, wasn't there?
Now, the show, at its time, was pretty risque, wasn't it? You know, it had drugs, it had sex and drink and all the rest of it. And you know, it was controversial for some at that particular period of time. Do you think it could be made today from the outset, given the fact that in some areas we're actually a bit more conservative than we were 20-odd years ago?
I think we could do it today. I do. I think that, I mean, in terms of just like sexual content, I mean, you know, turn on Netflix or watch stuff on Prime or HBO, Showtime, whatever. It's just people are banging each other left, right and centre. That doesn't seem to be a problem. Drug taking. Yeah, maybe that's perhaps a little bit more conservative these days. But I think that it changed, this changed the sort of landscape, didn't it, this life? It was like, it's okay, you can show people for real. You know, you can show people, you know, having sex, arguing, shouting, naked, taking drugs, you know, doing bad things at work, bunking off work, doing a shit job at work, you know, arguing. I mean, it's sort of allowed, I do think that. I think it did sort of allow television to become a little bit more liberal in that respect because we didn't have to watch perfect people doing beautiful, marvellous, wonderful, shiny people with lovely hair who do marvellous clothes in huge, giant, beautiful houses being marvellous.
Yeah, it certainly blazed a trail, you're right there. And it struck a chord with a generation of people, didn't it? I mean, I'm 47, and how old are you now?
You don't ask me that, darling.
A similar age. I think we're a similar age, aren't we?
I'm older than you.
Okay, well, I'm similar age to some of the other actors, aren't I?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm 49, and I think that they're like 46, 47, exactly.
Yeah. So I think it struck home with a certain, you know, a generation of people. It's weird, really, because it seemed to sort of capture the essence of the 1990s, certainly the late 1990s, really. Even though it was about lawyers and their... It could have been about anybody, really. It could have been about another group of people. But the main premise was it was about 20-somethings, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So how did it sort of... You know, you had a very strong character in that. Warren was a very strong character. You put a lot of effort and time into that character to make him authentic. And I'm sure because you played it so convincingly that loads of people thought you were gay.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of gays who like the fact you were Welsh and gay as well. How did it sort of play out for you after that? Were you able to put Warren to bed and move on to other things quickly or did he sort of follow you a bit? You know, were you able to move on to something quickly or did it take some time?
No, I think that because people wanted to start sort of doing similar sort of stuff or taking the reins over from This Life, you know, it was like if there was a gay character, they wanted me to play it. And I didn't feel that that was right, actually. You know, there are many brilliant, as we know, gay actors who can do an even better job than me and be even more convincing. So there was that, and I just thought it's silly to just ask me to you know, whenever you want to have a gay character, you ask me to do it. I don't think that was, I didn't feel comfortable with that. I'd completed everything that I wanted to do. I felt like I'd done, you know, a good job of portraying that character. I'd covered everything, I'd done everything, and I was proud of what I did. And, you know, especially, you know, when you start to sort of get letters from young guys who say, I watched that and I've told my parents I'm gay. And, you know, you get and a lot as well, and a lot of letters over the years. And that made me feel really good. You know, I felt good. I felt that was a nice, it's a nice thing to know. And also, you know, it's really complimentary when you're out and about and guys hit on you and you're like, Then you know, my girlfriend would, you know, sort of come over and put her arm around me, and they go, "What? You're not gay? No." Or, you know, I'm being hit on, and somebody wants to take me home, and I go, "I'm actually no, I can't. Sorry, I can't do that. I'm that's, you know." And they're shocked, and so, you know, it's really very, very complimentary, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was, you know, it was fabulous, because it was convincing, and that's ultimately, as a performer, is what you want, is people to kind of buy what you're doing, you know, and be convinced by it. So it was brilliant. And so there was, so I was very happy with all that and that wonderful feedback, and the way that the gay community also embraced me as well, you know, that they were so kind and loving towards me, that I'd was sensitive, you know, I'd had that enough sensitivity to portray the character in the way that I'd done it. And yeah. I felt good, you know, I felt really good. And I was especially, you know, touched that as a community of people, I was sort of applauded for the portrayal of a gay man that you'd never seen on television like that before. So, and I think that, it was a struggle. I had, you know, had all sorts of kind of issues, you know.
Did you have plenty of therapy?
Yeah. Did plenty of therapy. Not because of This Life, I hasten to add. Just me. And I've had all kinds of emotional and, you know, stuff over the years that probably fed into that fact that I was sort of self-sabotaging myself all the time. And so I think work really slowed down. You know, I was sort of not taking these roles if there was a gay part going or something sort of along those lines, added to the fact that emotionally and psychologically, I probably wasn't a very stable person at the time. And I had this propensity to just destroy everything that was good around me. Probably, you know, contributed to the fact that I struggled to find work and continuity in my career. But what happened is always with me in my life is that the theatre, I always go back to the theatre because that's, I love the live experience. I love theatre. I love performing on stage. And ultimately it was what I was trained to do, you know, back at Lambda. So I sort of found solace in the theatre and sort of stepped away from television because I wasn't really sure, you know, how it was going to go and where I was going. And, you know, it's sad, really, when I look back, it's sad because I think if I were as, you know, as stable and as, you know, collected as a person that I am now, I think my career would have looked very, very different. And especially when I saw, you know, the Jack and Andy progressing and moving forward and doing so well, they had that kind of that thing in them that they were solid and emotionally stable, and they were had an intelligence to kind of be able to plot a route forward. And I just wasn't. I was utterly hopeless. I mean, it's embarrassing when I think about it now, you know, and done that in moments through my life. So,
you know, I think everybody suffers with a dilemma at a certain stage in their life and sort of a crisis of knowing where to go and what to do and what to appreciate, etc. I mean, I started off in newspapers as a journalist, and then went into radio, did a bit of TV producing, etc. Became a newsreader. But I had moments in my life where, again, probably my 20s and early 30s, whereby that you're so mixed up with where your life's going that you end up destroying everything that you'd really like to do at that point. And it's only really, I suppose, years later, really, in a way, that you understand. You know, you're just learning, really, aren't you? You know, so when it comes to, you know, when you get to about 40, you know, 43, 44, 45, it suddenly sinks in. You think, oh, yeah. You know, you think to yourself, I get it now, you know. But, you know, I have periods in my life when I look back and I think to myself, why was I at that place for so long? Why did I stay there? Why did I do that for so long? You know, why didn't I do something else? But you have gone on to do loads of other things. I mean, you know, loads and loads of them. My stepdad's always going on about you in Midsummer Murders.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, your fellow actors in this life have all gone on to other things. I mean, it'd be interesting to do a programme, actually, looking at where everyone's gone and what happened to everybody from this life. You know, it was a springboard to lots of things, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, ultimately it's our job, and I can't speak for everybody else, but, you know, I threw all my eggs in one basket, to coin a really overused phrase, but it really did. I didn't ever at any point in my life kind of sit down and sort of think, hang on, if this doesn't go well, what am I going to do? And, you know, I love music and used to, I mean, I don't play anything like I used to, but, you know, I often think that maybe I should have focused a bit more on music, or I should have learned to write, maybe. You know, there were all sorts of things that I should have sat down really and given myself options, but I never did. I was too caught up in my own shit, you know, and the you know, Anthony Hopkins, I had great good fortune to meet him and establish a sort of little friendship with him, and we sort of, and he was amazing, because, you know, it's sort of to see somebody as great and as amazing as he is describe something that you go through and you know, happens to you, was a real moment in my life, because it's sort of like the gremlins, these Welsh gremlins that just crawl in your head and they won't leave, and how you manage that and how you cope with that, and that for me has been a process for kind of a lot of my life, you know. So now I arrive at a point at 49 where I finally think I've taken control of me rather than my gremlins taking control of me. And, you know, I don't look back with regret, but I do kind of look back and think, my goodness, if only that I could have done that then, you know, could have had a much smoother ride and a much, you know, but it didn't. And that's it. That's life.
This life, that's life.
Yeah.
Distinct drama. Fresh and original.
Mr. Fenn, I assure you that I have not come here to murder you, however tempted I may be.
A terse 40-minute drama set in a US correctional facility.
Oh, I see. You wish to be sent to the electric chair.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Mr. Fenn. That would not do at all.
Starring the award-winning Joe Sims.
In short, Mr. Fenn, you are what may be regarded as disposable humanity. Don't you dare think that I started all of this out of political ambitions.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Daniels, I do think that.
And to show you that there is such a thing as redemption, to show you that you are educable and have potential.
Show me? Show me, Mr. Daniels? I think you're done showing me my potential.
As We Forgive Them. Available now.
To place yourself in the center of a dream doesn't make it a bad one. And this dream, my dream, in whatever depths of despair it may have been born, has become the start of something real.
Listen at distinctnostalgia.com or search for Distinct Drama wherever you get your podcasts.
On the gay thing, you were a straight man playing a gay man. And there's a lot of talk today about it should be gay people playing gay characters. Do you think it's okay still for straight men to play gay men? You know, Rob Mallard, who plays Daniel on Coronation Street, he's a gay man playing a straight man in Coronation Street, as plays Daniel Osborne, which is Ken's son. And he got into a conversation that I noticed on Twitter a while back, where, you know, people were saying, other gay people were saying it was ridiculous that, I think it was somebody in Hollywood, some part in Hollywood it was a gay part and it was being played by a straight man, and they were saying this was ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And Rob was saying that, you know, as far as he was concerned, if he could play a straight man and he's gay, then why can't it be the other way around? And he described it as ideological zealotry, and, you know, I tend to agree with him, really. I mean, how do you feel about it? I mean, you know, I as a bisexual man, I watched you play that part and I thought you were extremely convincing. I have no issue with it whatsoever, but, you know, there is this conversation going on, isn't there? And what do you make of it? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you take that sort of, if you follow that sort of argument through, where do you draw the line? Really, you know, it's you're down to you as an actor to make sure that whatever you do it as best as you can and as sensitively as you can, and you know your subject well. So, yeah, I don't think a straight man should play a gay man if he's just going to have some general kind of whiffy, you know, general idea of what a gay man would do in a situation, or, you know, in the story that they're telling, give a rough approximation, camp it up a bit and go, what's wrong with that? No, you shouldn't be playing that part. You should absolutely not be anywhere near it. And you do see some guys, straight guys, playing gay men on television, and you know the giveaway is the physical stuff, is when you start to see the kiss, or you start to see the hugs, or you start to see the kind of physical contact that you have when, you know, two men love each other. And you can see that there's an uncomfortable, you know, there's something uncomfortable about watching that. And so I can understand where you would sort of like, where people could kind of go, you know, why is the straight guy doing that? Because I can see he's not a gay man. He can't kiss that guy in the right way. He's not holding him in the right way. The dynamic is wrong. Well, you know, that would be down to the casting and the director and the actor not doing the work. And you know, you've got to do the work. You've got to put your work in and know your subject. Know it as well as you possibly can, because then you will be convincing. You will be real, because you've got to own it and believe it. And you have got to step out of the way and allow whoever it is to come through. So I think that, I think now, though, you know, we're in such a different place with, you know, with people being able to come out and say that I am, you know, this, I'm that, I'm gay, I'm whatever it is, you know.
And of course, there's also a lot of assumptions as well, because of course we now know that, and we've known it for a long time, really, but we talk about it more, or we're aware of it more, that people's sexuality is fluid. You know, there are a lot of people who are bisexual.
Yeah.
And, you know, you shouldn't assume things about people, should you, really, basically?
No, I think that you know, it's just a general, for me anyway, it's just a general rule for the whole of my industry, you know, in terms of actors, is that, you know, you have to do the work. You have to put the work in, and you have to do it properly, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. So final question then. This life, you know, 23, 24 years on, more than two decades on, when you look back at it, did it change your life?
Do you mean, like, my life just generally, or my professional life?
Both, really.
Yeah, it did. I wouldn't say it changed my life in a grand way, in a kind of, you know, earth-shattering way, but it absolutely did change my life.
And do you think that was for the good?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, Jason, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. It's been wonderful to meet Warren after all of these years.
Yay.
Now he's out of therapy.
Well, so you think.
So you think, you know, yeah, you might not be.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed, Jason. It's been brilliant.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM. And you can hear lots more programmes via the Distinct Nostalgia player. June Brown talks about the early days of EastEnders.
I wouldn't like her for a neighbour, not in the old days, because she was a right old gossip and she was prejudiced a lot.
Yeah.
But they used her to get rid of prejudice, you know, particularly in the gay storyline with Michael Cashman. Yeah.
Henry Kelly is back and going for gold.
In any quiz programme, you've got to concentrate on what the point is. And I have to watch my breathing. We learned how to control me, the contestants, and the computer. That was part of the gimmick of going for gold.
Yes.
These programmes and many more are all available now at distinctnostalgia.com. Get in touch via the Contact Us page on the website. Bye for now.
Distinct Nostalgia is brought to you in partnership with Life Rooms and Mersey Care NHS Foundation Trust. We've lots of activities for you to do at home at liferooms.org. Staying well, staying home.